It's time for your local Ford Dealers pregame show, presented by Aurelio's Pizza. And now, here are your hosts, Chicago football legend Olin Cruz, log-snapping Iron Man Patrick Manley, and Mully from the Mully and Haw Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, always live on the free Odyssey app.
Oh, yes, indeed. Welcome inside the pregame show. The clubhouse is closed, but we've got the pregame show this morning. In honor of the Bears' trip to London, your local Ford Dealers pregame show presented by Aurelio's Pizza. Although we will be eating cucumber sandwiches on this glorious morning. It's almost tea time, Pat, in London. An hour till tea time. Very
Mully,
civilized
how you doing,
people.
Man?
How are you,
buddy? I'm good. It's just I think my internal clock is off like the Bears right now, just having to do it on Saturday morning. But excited. I mean, the last 2 weeks have been a lot of fun, especially talking about it on the radio and then all the product you've seen on film and on the field. So we'll see what happens today over there in London. But it's a very interesting trip to go over there and play football.
Have you? You've played
yes,
overseas.
I did.
I'm curious when we start talking about the travel schedule for both teams. A lot of difference in what the Bears are doing vis-a-vis the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, the Jaguars are playing two games in London. They are going to play the Bears Sunday at Spurs Stadium, and then they will be staying in London and playing at Wembley, I believe, against the Patriots the following Sunday. So this is a two-game trip for them. They came in significantly later, and then they got delayed by the storm. I saw a breakdown. You would think that there wouldn't be much of a difference in terms of which team goes first, given the fact that they're going at completely different times. The Bears left Monday night, getting there Tuesday morning, and Jacksonville couldn't get out when they wanted to leave on Thursday. They ended up getting in 4 a.m. London time on Friday morning. Is there an advantage to that?
That's a great question. You know, I think that everybody's crunched the numbers, and you don't really have a conclusion. But we left on Thursday, and we played Tampa, and Tampa left earlier in the week, I think on Monday or something. So they were there earlier, and we ended up winning, I think, 24-18, and we kicked their butt pretty good. I think it was 24-5 in the middle of the fourth quarter, and they scored a couple late touchdowns. But to me, the way I look at it is, I think as a head coach, you've got to evaluate your team and what's best for your team. I think Lovey obviously did the right thing for us in 2011. We were more of a veteran team. He kept us on track from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and got our normal practice weekend work in. And then we left that Thursday night. And I called Garza, Roberto Garza, and talked to Matt Forte via text and asked them about how they felt on Sunday. Because that's the most important thing. It doesn't really matter during the week. It's how you really feel on Sunday. And I was recalling how I felt that it was not fun on Friday. It was not fun on Saturday. Jet lag is real. It's undefeated. Yep. But I remember waking up Saturday or Sunday morning and being like, oh, I'm good to go. And then obviously adrenaline kicks in for the game and all that kind of stuff. And I asked Matt Forte, who rushed for 145 yards that day on 25 carries, how he felt. And he's like, I really don't remember. I go, well, obviously you felt pretty good for rushing for 145. And then talking to Garza, he just said he remembers trying to catch up on sleep, trying to nap a little bit, but not like kind of lose your sleep cycle, because you need to, you know, fall asleep on Friday and get a full night's sleep. And he said he remembered feeling pretty good on Friday, or excuse me, on Saturday, or on Sunday as well. So it worked for us. And then I knew stories of the Tampa guys that got there earlier in the week. They were having a lot of fun at night. They were partying a little bit. So I don't know. I don't think our team would have been that way just because we were more of a veteran team, but it worked out perfectly for us. But I think the temptation, if you do go early and you've never been to Europe, you've never been to London, never been to England, that you do want to spend a little bit more time out. You might want to figure out what a pub is really like, and you might have one too many, three too many or whatever. But I think as a head coach, you just have to figure out your team and what's best for you. And we'll find out today if this worked for the Bears, but I kind of like the idea, if you can trust your guys to, you know, to stay in line, to do the right thing and be a professional.
It's wild to think about the Bears having been there as long as they have. They've been there for a week. The thing that's different, maybe, I don't remember where you guys stayed when you went, but they're out in the country field. they're out at a golf place in Hertfordshire, which is about an hour and a half outside of London, and they have a field there, an actual practice field that's been built, because when teams go over, they stay there and use the field.
Yeah, I kind of like that. We stayed in the city, which for me, it was nice on that Friday, because we landed, I think we checked in.
Yeah.
And then I think we changed at the hotel and got on buses, and we went to Lord's Stadium. It was a cricket stadium. So we had practice right then. And then we came back after that, and that's when you're just super jet lagged. And they kept encouraging us to stay up and go walk around and tour the city. So for us, maybe that helped, because it was nice to get out and walk around. My wife and daughter were there. We toured the city a little bit, so it kept me up a little bit later. But I think if you're going for a week, and I think that's what the Buccaneers did. They stayed somewhere out of the city. And if you're there for a week, and I think Eberflus mentioned it, that it feels like training camp a little bit. That you're away by yourself as your own team, and it's a good way to bond as well. So I think if you go for the week, I would have liked that. But I like the way we did it and staying in the city just for those two nights. It was kind of easy.
Yeah. As much as we talk about the game and how it's going to feel on your body clock, the fact of the matter is that the game tomorrow will be played at 2:30 London time. So if you've been over there, as you know, Patrick, if you've been over there for as many days as they have, it will feel normal to them.
Sure.
It will feel like a regular timed game. It's not like they're getting up and trying to choke down some eggs and get to the stadium, right?
Right,
it's a little bit different. They'll have a day for themselves.
No, they'll be 100%. And then Jacksonville obviously has been going over there for years now, so
yes,
they feel like their plan on leaving Thursday night works for them. So and they'll feel fine on Sunday. So it's to be honest with you, Mully, when I did it, I hated it. It was a headache just because you had to break up your routine. But now you look back on it, you think it's pretty cool to say I played in Wembley Stadium and went over there and, you know, we're kind of an ambassador for the NFL and kind of bringing this international feel to the game. So I had mixed feelings about it, but they're going to be just fine on Sunday, and it should be a darn good game.
Yeah, it is. The game itself is fascinating to me because of the circumstance of where you're at in the season. You know, the Jaguars finally broke through last week and got their first victory. And, you know, as we all know, Robert Saleh was fired by the Jets earlier in the week. And that happened right after they got back from London. they played on Sunday in London, and then they get back on Monday. Saleh goes into the building, and I guess he had the intention of demoting, not firing, but demoting the offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett, taking away play calling duties. And before he could even get to that, he got called into Woody Johnson's office, or Woody and his brother actually went into Saleh's office, and they fired him. And there had been a lot of speculation that maybe it was Doug Peterson that would be the first guy gone. A Super Bowl winning coach, by the way, won one in Philadelphia with the former Bears quarterback, Nick Foles. Actually, Foles became the Bears quarterback after that whole event. But, you know, I don't know that the odds were that Saleh would be the first guy fired. I think he threw too many interceptions in that game. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
I'm joking, obviously.
No, I know what you're saying. No, but that was a shocking firing, to be honest with you. I mean, just to have it so quickly, and what are there, 2 and 3, and then you hear those details you're talking about, that he was going to demote Nathaniel Hackett. Now you're wondering how much did Aaron Rodgers have to say about this. And I think he was on the Pat McAfee show saying he had no say. But I think there's always more to the story. But
sure,
it would be interesting, Mully, if Doug Peterson is fired in London while they're there for 2 weeks. Like, would you do that to a coach? And do you give him a first-class ticket back, or do you put him in coach? That's my question. Because they're flying over in first class, I know that. But if you get fired, you fly back and coach.
Yeah, well, it's a cruel business, as you know. I think Shad Khan has businesses in London. Doesn't he own Wembley? I would hope that he wouldn't fire a guy in London. I would hope that you survive that trip. I hope it's not a win or else, because I would hate to see the Bears lose to a team that is overly motivated to keep their coach, right?
Yes.
I hope that's not a factor, frankly. But this is, you're right. They do this every year. I believe they won two games in London last year. Now they were a different team and they were playing better. Nonetheless, it does give you a little bit of pause. If this game were on the lakefront, I would feel really good about the Bears' chances. And I don't feel bad about the chances this week, but I do think there's a complication here.
Oh, I agreed. And it's just, you know, I was going back and watching a little bit of the Bears-Panthers game this morning again, and it just, the Panthers were horrible. And then they got beat up, right, lost four more starters. And I'm just thinking about this Jaguars team and the talent that they have. They have a lot of talent offensively. Two really good DNs, which could give these tackles some trouble.
Right.
But they're playing like a bad team. They're having, you know, bad interceptions, bad penalties, secondary struggling. So to me, it looks like they're just, you know, they have that talent, but they're not putting it together. And then when you see that and you hear that, you think about coaching, right? What are they doing wrong to not get this talent together? So I hope they don't get it together today because they do have the talent. I hope they keep shooting themselves in the foot with the bad penalties and things like that. But today's talent they're going against is much better than the Panthers. And I think you're right. If they were on the lakefront, I would have a more of a positive feeling. I do have a positive feeling, but it's just a wild card going over there and playing.
Patrick, I'm curious, you know, we'll spend a ton of time talking about Caleb Williams, but what is your take from a distance on Trevor Lawrence? What is it about him that you see that, you know, he's the last man standing from that draft class. Everybody else, including Justin Fields, that was drafted the same year, and he was the first overall pick, but everyone else has moved on to a different team. And he's the only one still in the original team that took him.
Yeah, there's just – it's inconsistency is what I see. And there's times where he just looks like he's mechanically perfect, on time, comfortable. He just looks like the first round overall – the first pick overall. And then there's times he's just inconsistent. This year he's been overthrowing quite a few receivers. Had a bad interception last week. Just looks a little – I guess we called Caleb earlier in the year skittish, you know, or like jittery. He looks a little jittery back there. They're like, is he getting a little broken and uncomfortable? So he just doesn't look consistent. But then there's times you watch him in some games and some quarters, you're like, man, that's the number one pick overall. And I'm hoping he looks a little jittery today and this defense can get after him. But it's just the inconsistency, Molly. It's just, you're just kind of shocked that it hasn't clicked more for him. Is that coaching? Is that O-line play, because he has the players around him. I just don't know. He just it's just an interesting case, because sometimes, like I said, he just looks so darn good, and then there's times you're like, what are you doing?
We talk to Stacey Dales from the NFL Network every week on Fridays and or Thursdays late in the week. We talk to her, and she's been in London for a couple of weeks. She covered that Jets game, and so she's there with the Bears now. And we had a long conversation with her about what's going on with the Bears and what the week was like, etc. And she told us of an interview she did with Mercedes Lewis, where Mercedes Lewis, you know, sat down. He's a guy, a Bear, you know, friendly enough fella, likes to talk. And she asked him about the meeting they had with Shane Waldron. The Bears had the leadership council had with Shane Waldron, and you remember him coming out and saying, we want to be coached, and it's not Pop Warner and all that stuff. Apparently, what she revealed to us, and I need so much more information about this, and I want to get your stance on the idea of it, but apparently the Bears did not open the season with a first 15 scripted plays. So it wasn't until after the third game that they started scripting plays. And that actually matches when Justin Fields started wearing a band on his wrist with the plays listed on it. I was stunned to learn that they did not open the season with a first 15, because as we know, most coordinators in the league do that, and they do it not, they're not scripting every play like now is our running down now, because you don't know what the down and distance. They just put together a list of plays they really like. They think they work on them during the week. They think they can run them. And they want to run them in certain situations to see how a defense reacts to them, to maybe set up a different play later in the game. The word that I've been told is probing. They are a probing idea that you come out and you're putting together these plays and you're trying to get a look at how people react. I guess Waldron felt early, according to what Stacy learned from Mercedes Lewis, that they didn't want to overload the quarterback and they didn't want to have too much information. I think it's a huge help for a quarterback.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm stunned that they did not do that to open the season.
Yeah, to me, that's simplifying the offense, because then you're talking through those first 15 plays on Saturday and making sure that you understand what you're trying to work on, what you're looking for through the defense. But honestly, Mully, it looked like they didn't script the first 15 plays.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, you're right.
It was like they were just throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what's sticking without a certain plan. I'm glad they're doing what they're doing now. And, I mean, everybody's been talking about it, but credit to Caleb Williams. This growth, what we've seen in the first 5 weeks, is pretty amazing. I mean, it's like what I was talking about Trevor Lawrence, where you're seeing the inconsistency where some games he's getting, some games he's regressing. Well, right now, just in Caleb in a small sample size, I feel like he's getting better and better each week. And it was helpful last week he went against that Carolina Panthers defense, but sometimes you need that. You know, sometimes you need to ease that process for him and make him a little more comfortable. As the season goes along, he's going to face better defenses. But when I heard that about the first 15, Mully, I was like, wait, aren't you supposed to do that? Like, that just doesn't make sense to me. And it's great, though, Mully, that they're actually talking and having healthy communication and fixing this. You know, they're talking about all these meetings they're having. Well, we're seeing progress and we're seeing a better product out there. So when I first heard all this talking and meetings, I'm like, oh no, once you have those, that's like you feel like the team's falling apart. But for some reason, it's working with these guys. And I, you know, like you said, you want to dig in more. I'd like to find out more exactly what's going on, who started it, who's the one that said we need to get this done. But it's working. It's working, and we're seeing the product on the field look a lot better.
Well, and it makes me feel like they're not just getting better. They've got, like, a better plan. Like, they actually have thought it through to a point where we're not just seeing Justin Fields get better. We're seeing everyone get better. As you say, the communication. But that's the coordinator. That is the quarterback.
The run game has gotten a lot better. More and more of a gap scheme and double teams and stuff like that. The run game just looks a whole lot better, and they've figured out how to use their guys better. You know what I mean? Their skill set is, and it's a nice, you know, as much as we got on Shane for the first couple weeks, I think you have to give him some credit for being able to change and fix this offense to make it look like they're capable of doing what they're capable of doing with that talent out there.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, Pat. And I felt we had a conversation early in the week where, you know, if you could go back and replay a couple of games from earlier in the year, how much better do they look to be now, and how much better might they be? And I don't know that they would have won against the Texans, but I feel like they'd have beaten the Colts. And it's a terrible way to feel, and it's also a wasted emotion because it's about how you're doing moving forward. But I think we have seen from the Bears in the Matt Eberflus era kind of slow starts to the season, which might not be his fault. It might be the way that teams are allowed to prepare these days. It always has this feel as if you've walked in on the middle of you're in the second act of a play. Like, what happened early? How did they get here?
Right.
And then as the second half begins, you're like, oh, they're significantly better than they were.
Yeah, now that Colts game too, I think when you look back, if they're kind of in the playoff picture in the next couple weeks, you're going to look back at that one and be like, we should have had that one. That's one that was very winnable. We said, I think we all picked the Bears to win before that one. But again, credit to that team after losing a game like that where they should have won. To me, they were a better football team. They bounced back. They came out and beat the Rams and won last week as well. So showing some resiliency of saying, okay, we need to figure this thing out. We know we're better than we are, and they've done it. So they've done that so far, and it's good to see. But again, that Colts game is going to be one you're going to look on and be like, man, we should have had that. And you hope at the end of the season that's not the one where you're one game short of the playoffs.
All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. We're going to come back, talk to Olin. I think he's got the Victoria Sponge ready to go with his tea. If I'm not mistaken, he's a big fan of various cakes and specialty items that you have with that thinly cut sandwich. So it'll be great to get Olin's take on everything on this glorious tea time coming up in England, where everyone is listening to us. There's a lot of our English fans that are all texting like crazy. So we'll talk to Olin next. It is the pregame show, the local Ford dealers pregame show, presented by Aurelio's Pizza on the Score.
It's amazing. You know, he's taking those strides that he needs to. He's been bossy lately, telling us that we need to be on the details. We really do for him to be the best player he needs to be. So, but yeah, I think that's it.
We're back with more of your local Ford dealers pregame show, presented by Aurelio's Pizza on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the Free Odyssey app.
Yes, indeed. It's your local Ford dealers pregame show presented by Aurelio's Pizza. We're delighted to welcome in the great man himself, Mr. Olin Kreutz, joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Olin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I've been good. A little surprised to hear Manley throw me in that I picked the Bears to beat the Colts, which is not true. My record is undefeated, but Manley threw me under the bus, and I'm fine with that.
I mean, you're a big man to say so, because I also picked the Colts, and I didn't say a word, Olin.
Oh, yeah. My bad, guys.
Well, I wasn't going to bring up how you called Caleb Justin Fields either, but that's okay. We're all good morning. It's a little different morning. Yeah. We're thrown off a little bit. Imagine my shock that you guys can go on without me with the phone pregame show. That's shocking him.
I know. It's a struggle, man. It's a real struggle. Hey,
I'm not happy you guys sound so good. You know what I mean? Like, Pat, you remember when you would get hurt and somebody would go in and you're acting like you're cheering for them and you're really not?
Yep. 100%
with you guys this morning.
100%. Hey, well, let's start here though, because I know you're headed down to the Illinois game and it's Saturday morning. Yes, and give me a little rundown. What are we going to get from Purdue and Illinois today?
Well, Purdue's having a rough year, right? But it's always an interesting game because the Purdue head coach used to be the Illinois defensive coordinator. So a lot of, they know each other really, really well. Obviously, they both want to beat each other really bad. And like you know, like when you're in your division, anything can happen in those games, right? But Purdue having a rough year, Illinois having a good year coming off that loss to Penn State after beating Nebraska. They had a bye week last week. Hopefully they come in here fresh today, focused, ready to beat this Purdue team and not looking ahead to what will be their 100th game in Memorial Stadium against Michigan. So big game today to take care of business, to get to next week for another big game. But I expect a tough, hard-fought game, even though Purdue has not been playing well, just because they know each other so well, right? The defense, both of them run the same defense. They know the schemes, the concepts, Pat, like you know you play guys in the division. We'd go up to Green Bay, even when Green Bay was really good, and we'd have a shot at beating them just because we knew them so well. So that's the kind of game I'm expecting today. I'm expecting to have a good hot dog and a few beers.
That's living. So, Olin, help us out. We had a brief discussion over the fact that apparently in the first three games of the year, the Bears were not scripting any plays. Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, didn't have what he calls the first 15. I believe Kyle Shanahan has 25. I mean, there are a lot of these guys love to have a bunch of plays that they're using and creating and setting up things with. Every game they play, they felt somehow it might be better for the quarterback. I would argue he's played better since they started scripting plays, apparently. But what was your take on learning that, and what does that mean? And did every team you played, did Kyle Orton have scripted plays? I mean, how common is the practice?
Yeah, my first thought was I'm waiting for Coach Waldron to respond to it, right? And the hard thing is that we all know Stacey Dales, right? And we all know she doesn't report something unless she knows. So hearing that, honestly, my first thought was that can't be true, right? That she must have, you know, somebody's got to be wrong here, because as Pat knows, that first 15, that first 10, man, that is critical to your game, to me, right? Like if you give me a first 15, Mully, I'm studying the defense. I know how they're going to line up. Now I'm looking for what personnel they're going to be in. I know what blitz they could bring against what the formation we line up in against that play. I get so much information from that first 15. Just as an example, the night before the game, I got my first 15 out. I'm going through video. I'm matching plays. I'm matching fronts. I'm matching formations. And then in the morning when I wake up, I'm doing it again. Like, those are the plays I'm looking at. And then I have a feel for how the offensive coordinator wants to attack this defense and what he's looking for. So to hear that, I honestly can't believe it's true. And I really want to hear Coach Waldron's response to that, that he had, I mean, did they have a first five? I mean, a first seven? I think they had something going into the game, because it's really an interesting comment to me, Pat. Now, every team I've been on, Pat, I remember a first 15. Every yeah. team I've been on. You get yeah. it, Mully. You get it Saturday morning at walkthrough, mm-hmm. right? You get your first 15. Some coaches give it to you Friday after right. your last Friday practice. And really, man, like, a lot of my studying from Friday to the game was around that first 15.
And, Olin, you could help the coach too, right? So if they give you that first 15 and you've prepped for all these defenses, all these looks, all this personnel, and all of a sudden they flip it up a little bit, you come off the sideline, you're talking to Harry Hiestand, whoever, the OC, and be like, hey, this is different. We need to be ready for this. What's going on? Isn't that right?
It's a great point, Pat. It really is, and you know that, right? Like you would hear us talking about that
yes.
stuff, and
yeah.
of course I'd get the first 15. I would say, wow, look, I'm one-on-one with a big nose guard again. How fun is that? Since we didn't pass the ball too much, right? But it's like you get a feel for the game plan. You
yeah.
get a feel for what information, say, Harry, Ron, John Shoup, Bob Wiley, Terry Shea, whoever it is, Mike Tice, Mike Martz, you get a feel for how they want to attack that team and the information they're looking for, and then I'm looking for it up front, and then we're on the sideline talking about the information we are collecting through the game, how they're lining up, how they're attacking us. Hey, look, they're stunting to the tight end because they know we want to run God's play, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever we're trying to do out there. But, you know, I will say this, guys, like, we are making a lot of it his first 15. We got to go back, though, right? The first play
yep.
of the game last week should have been a pick six.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? And that was the first 15. And you can see why they would call that. It was Keenan Allen's best route versus what Caleb throws well, right? The out route. Right? But if Keenan Allen doesn't knock it down, Horn walks it in the end zone, and we're all saying, man, this first 15 is a dumb idea.
Just along those lines, Olin, I'm just curious, when you see a guy like Keenan Allen, and you know, he's like kind of a career third down machine. The guy is just does mm-hmm. a remarkable job of getting open. He can catch everything. I'm curious, now that he has not been on the injury report for a couple of weeks, right? We start to feel like maybe this is a game where you're going to go to him more. Maybe this is a time where he's going to have kind of the breakout. I don't want them to stop going to DJ Moore down the field. I'd like them to add more to it. But now that he's gone a couple of weeks without hearing about the plantar fasciitis or the heel injury, whatever it might be, is that an indication that this could be a better game for him?
You know, it's just the leaders on that team have to get together and say, look, the star of the offense, I heard Julius Peppers, and I remember, Mully, you texted me right after. You said, man, what a speech that was he gave at the Hall of Fame. And it was. And I remember he said in his Hall of Fame speech, the star of the defense is the defense, right? The star of this offense is the offense. Mm-hmm. When it's your week, it's your week. When it's Swiss week, that's why you put so many stars.
I think he just entered the stadium.
Yeah.
Or he cracked his first beer, one of the two.
But that's a great point he's making there. That is really
– Yes, yes.
That's so much the truth.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes,
yeah,
you're back, Olin. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, like, you know, the star of the offense is the offense. And yeah. Keenan Allen, Pat, I'm sure you watched the film, Molly. I know you did. You saw all the things he did.
Yes.
He does so much on that field. He's a big guy at the slot position. I tweeted out this week him hitting that safety, right? Coming in there and digging that safety out on a run play. He brings a lot.
Yeah, he does. He just to me, it's I might be wrong, but I think each week the game plan is just going to be different. Like somebody's going to get more targets compared to the other guy, just depending on what the defensive coordinator is going to do. Like, is this week he's saying, I got to take DJ Moore out of this game? That means Rome and Keenan are going to be out there more. I expect that to kind of go up and down throughout the season. The guys will have little streaks here and there, just because they, you know, we saw it when you put them out there, Olin. I think it was that 3rd and 6 on the near the goal line, and you have Cole Kmet, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, and DJ Moore out there, and then you run a draw play with DeAndre Swift, and they have what, like 5.5 in the box. You know, the safety's bouncing in and out. That to me just shows you the talent they have of those guys out there and the respect that's given to those guys. So I just think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, each week it's just going to be somebody different.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And as we get to like the better teams, and we talked about, you can only play who's on that football field. But, you know, anybody who watched that film, we're all wondering, is what we saw real, right, Pat? But
right, right.
And Molly, but listen, man, this offense, it has the weapons, right? It has all these guys. And really, it's probably our problem in the Chicago media, because we're just not used to it, right? So it's like, someone's not going to be happy every week. Someone's going to be missing every week as we go through this. There's just not enough footballs to spread around. DeAndre Swift, you're looking at when Keenan Allen came back, we talked a lot about on this show, what was Ryan Poles' plan, right? What was his plan when he put this offense together? Well, you see now, they're out of the, what we call the box, right? The tight end box, where you draw a box around the offensive line and you look at how many defenders in there, and it's simple math, right? Simple math. If we have more blockers than they have defenders, we'll run the ball. Well, these teams they played, they couldn't match up on the outside. So they had to lighten the box. The Bears have more blockers than they had defenders, and it was Swift's turn.
Olin, I'm curious your take on some of the injuries that the Bears are dealing with at this point. Obviously, the idea of Jaquan Brisker, this is the third year in a row where he is missing a game due to a concussion. That is a scary reality for him, but he did not travel with the team. He will not be playing in the game. We will see Elijah Hicks in his place. This will be Elijah Hicks's 9th career start. It's not like we haven't seen him before. I'm just wondering, though. I heard Matt Bowen say that the defense loses something without their intimidator, without the guy that steps up and hits people in Jaquan Brisker. How big a blow is that, especially with Tyreek Stevenson now getting hurt in practice on Thursday and being doubtful for the game? So potentially two-fifths of your secondary, or the great strength of your team, absent.
Yeah, with Brisker, you worry about it because he went home, and that means he came back and reported his concussion symptoms, right? So you're a little worried about where he is. Like you're saying, it's his third one. So you're a little worried about that. Obviously, he is a physical presence on that football field. Remember, the Bears got stopped on that 4th and 1 last week. Roschon Johnson got tackled. He got stopped there. And then Brisker causes that fumble with Tremble, and that turned the game around, right? Carolina almost had a big play to change the momentum there. Brisker comes, steps downhill, hits the guy there. The ball fumbled out. We got the ball. We're moving into the end zone. You do worry about it. I'm worried about it more, guys, because of what I've seen from this run defense, right? And the way they cover up for the run defense is they go to man, they do run blitzes, and they stunt. So I'm a little worried about with Bigsby. I'm a little worried about our run defense. Remember, I heard you guys talking about the Colts game earlier, right, and that Colts loss. What people forget is the Bears scored a touchdown. They could have got the ball back to win the game, and the defense couldn't stop the Colts' run. So this run defense has been struggling for a little while now, right? And then we heard about Billings back. And Jervon Dexter, as good as he's been playing, his run defense has not been great. And Tremaine Edmonds' run fits have not been great. So, Mully, like you're saying, when you lose your secondary, can you go man now? And we just talked about the box, loading the box on the offensive side. Let's talk about it on the defensive side. What do the Bears do when they can't stop the run? They load the box and they go man. Well, they got an elite secondary, so they're capable of doing that. If you lose two guys out of that secondary and you go load the box, do you give the Jaguars a chance to beat you over the top for a quick touchdown?
Yeah, that's one of my big concerns. The other one, Olin, I'd love to get your take on their DNs, Jacksonville's DNs, Walker and Hines Allen. I mean, that you know, that's their best part of their defense. What's your scouting report on those guys?
Yeah, just really good pass rushers, not great against the run, right? Like, get our O-line going downhill again. I heard you talk about those gap schemes, the dual play, right, where it's Pryor and Darnell Wright and Mercedes Lewis and Cole Kmet doubling those guys down, get those guys moving forward. We don't want to be in a lot of long yardage situations against them. Braxton's been struggling a little bit on that edge, right? I'm sure you've watched film, Pat.
Yep.
He's got to get to punching a little more. He turns a little too early. He's giving the guy his chest, and he's getting walked back a little bit. Darnell Wright, we know his fundamentals this year on film have not looked great, ducking his head. So if we get into a game where we gotta throw the ball, move the ball down the field, you know, Caleb hasn't thrown the ball as much lately. A lot of that is because you have a lead late in the game, and you don't have to throw the ball. But, yes, keep the game close. We know what this offensive line has to do, right? We've watched enough film. We know what they have to do. They got to run the ball. They got to stay ahead of the chains. Caleb had ample amount of time in these last couple of weeks. Sometimes I thought he was holding the ball too long. Some of the stuff I saw on film, a little scary, even with all his improvement, running around, making guys miss, the ball hanging out. So, look, give the tackles chips. Keep that quarterback safe. Keep him upright. Stay in front of the chains. We know what the game plan is. These two defensive ends, two of the better ones they faced since Houston.
Yep.
Who did you pick, Olin, in the game?
I got the Bears winning this game. When I watched the Jaguars, I heard Pat mention they got talent, and you turn a film on, you're like, gosh, it's a bad football team you're watching, right? And Trevor Lawrence, like, the ball just comes out a tick late. It really does. It's interesting to watch him. He's just like late, and then he'll get hot and make throws. So I got the Bears winning a close one, 24-17. I think the defense, again, hopefully, the one thing I almost have it a pick 'em after I heard that, Brisker and Tyreek were out. But I think the Bears, with their momentum, with the way the Jaguars are playing, with Pat can tell you better than me, with everything everybody went on with that storm, Pat, I hope everything's all right with you, your family, and your house. But with everything going on down there, that's a lot to go through.
Yes.
I actually picked the same score, Olin, which means either great minds think alike or fools never differ. So just take whichever one you like.
Yeah, with me and you, I'd probably go with the fools part. But we'll have fun all the way through it, Molly. You know what I mean? The best thing about me and you, Molly, is we act like we know. As long as we do that, we're good.
That's awesome. Thank you, Olin. Great.
Hey, enjoy the day, man.
Good luck to my wife, Wendy, at the marathon tomorrow. And we're excited about this football game. We're at the football game. We're at the marathon. Too bad, Carmel. We lost last night. Kids played tough, though. But busy weekend. Just loving it.
Yeah.
Great
amen.
Stuff, Olin. Thank you. That is the great Olin Kreutz. And we will be right back here on the pregame show, your local Ford dealers pregame show presented by Aurelio's Pizza on the Score.
We're back with more of your local Ford dealers pregame show presented by Aurelio's Pizza on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the Free Odyssey app.
Oh, yes, indeed. Welcome back to your local Ford dealers pregame show presented by Aurelio's Pizza. And you heard Bruce Levine. They'll be back next week. We have a special pregame show today because the Bears play tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. And so we are trying to make sure we deal with that. And I think it'd be awful early trying to get up and do a pregame show tomorrow. So we're... We're going to be there tomorrow for the
Molly, post. You're used to that. What are you talking about? That's your normal day, right?
I'm like, as you know, I'm a bit robotic about it. I'm not even human. I've no longer
I wouldn't have liked it. You would have been just
That's
fine.
I thought you guys might have a problem. Certainly,
I appreciate you making sure we're not getting up at 5 in the morning.
That is a problem for some people, not for me, but I've just gotten used to it. It's more just sort of, unfortunately, the way I must live. But Pat, I'm curious. So because it was the games in London, because it's a wonderful event type of thing, we heard from Kevin Warren again. this week on Wednesday, and we actually heard from George McCaskey on Thursday, and it was interesting because they talked about the lakefront, I want to correct myself, it's called the Domed Stadium, not the Doomed Stadium, it's domed. You often misspell that word, whether it's Freudian or not. I was curious to get your take on what Kevin Warren had to say. And George basically said that they support Kevin and Kevin's vision, which is the lakefront stadium, which means $2.7 billion of public money, because it's a public-private partnership. Although the Bears, if there's ever a concert there or anything, the Bears get all the gate receipts. I wonder what your thought is, and has anything changed in the way you view it? Did you hear anything that we haven't heard before? I'm not sure they said anything other than they repeated the timetable of the legislature, and they mentioned that they're going to need enabling legislation, which for the project to move forward. That was George's quote.
Yeah, the only thing I heard there is politics. that's going to be the hard part. That's the state and that's the city. You know, you got Pritzker you got to deal with, and Mayor Johnson as well. So that's all I hear. And then you hear they're going to have a shovel in the ground by 2025. I hope they do. And Mully, when I saw that, you know, grand scheme picture, whatever you want to call it, of the lakefront and the dome stadium there, I loved it. I mean, that's amazing. If you can get that done, I would love it. That would be amazing. But again, it's all about the almighty dollar and politics, especially in that state and that city. So we'll see what happens. It is interesting to me that it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that they've kind of just pivoted off Arlington. Like they've got their most of their eggs in the Chicago basket instead of going out to Arlington Heights. So I thought maybe they would be a little more 50-50, but I hear politics. That's the biggest thing I hear. But if they can build anything close to what that rendition was that they put up a couple months ago, that would be something special. And just being a player and the other players that come to Chicago to play, there's something about playing on the lakefront. Yeah, it's pretty cool that it's outdoors now. But I think just being in the city of Chicago, it's different. You know, it's cool when you're in a city playing like that, and especially an iconic place like Chicago. I hope that works out, but there's a lot of variables.
Yeah, I mean, I have this strange feeling that either the Bears have reached some secret agreement or have a secret understanding or know something that we don't know, mm-hmm. and they're going to be able to pull this off, or this is kind of a lot of smoke, and it's they're going to wind up having to kind of put their tail between their legs and go back out to Arlington and figure out how to get that done, because they own that property.
Yep.
I can't really get past this idea that the appetite from the people we've talked to, there's just not a lot of appetite to spend $2.7 billion on a new domed stadium at the lakefront.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I wonder what is behind the Bears and the money there. You know, there was talk about the private equity groups coming in now, this passed by the NFL, that would bring a lot of money in, but are the McCaskies willing to do that? And is that something maybe they're open up to doing, which would help fund all that stuff? So I don't know. I don't know.
If like you had a partner in that building where they got to buy a certain amount of your team and also invest in a certain amount of the building, could that be a way? Is there something like that going on that we don't know about? But I'm confounded by it, because we should have talked to Olin, because he and George are very tight. I'm sure he's got a lot of information.
Well, they did save money by only wanting to spend $5.25 on him an hour as an O-line coach. So maybe that'll help. Maybe that's what he was thinking is for the future, to help fund the new stadium.
The new Doom Stadium. All right, we'll be right back. We got to get to the quarterback. We got to talk about Mr. Bossy Pants and what's going on with Justin Fields. We'll hear from him after hearing from DJ Moore earlier calling him Bossy. It is the pregame show on The Score.